Welcome to Limited Time Only.
I'm Esther.
And I'm Susie.
Limited Time Only is the podcast for anyone who feels there aren't enough hours in their life.
And each week, there's a different topic for you to get your ears around.
Featuring chat, comedy sketches, and interviews with interesting people.
Limited Time Only is a pick-me-up in podcast form.
The special guest later in the episode is
Hannah Miller.
This week, it's time for Burning Out. Ugh, it's all too much.
Oh, Esther, I haven't got any ideas for this week's show. I feel completely uninspired. Esther, what are you stuffing into your mouth?
A bit of Lady Macbeth for inspiration.
You're eating the works of Shakespeare?
No, I'm eating a delicious bar of Lady Macbeth dark orange chocolate from Sweet Theatre. I've just finished off Alice in Wonderland. Even the artwork on the packaging is beautiful.
Mm, is it helping?
Indeed it is. Here, have a little nibble on Oscar Wilde.
Mmm.
That one's gin and tonic flavour.
Yum. Have you got any more?
Esther,
have you eaten all the Sweet Theatre chocolate?
Should I exit stage left?
Yeah, I think you should.
Sweet Theatre. Chocolate with drama. Available online at sweettheatre.com and in participating theatres. If Esther hasn't eaten it all.
A quick shout out to our LTO patrons. Thank you so much to everyone who signed up so far. If you haven't yet become an LTO patron, do not fear. All you need to do is head over to patreon.com and search for Limited Time Only Podcast, and you will find Esther and myself with a little welcome video. There is bonus audio content on there as well, and details of our very first LTO Live online event, which is on Thursday the 30th of November at 8 p.m. online on your computers. There's going to be all the usual LTO fun, hosted by Esther and myself, of course, but we'll be live and we'll be able to talk to you and you'll be able to talk to us, which is very exciting. We're going to be adding more bonus content, videos, exclusive competitions and live events to our Patreon page all the time. So if you fancy joining us over there, it would be a joy to see you. But for now, let's crack on with the podcast.
I don't know if this is a sign that I'm massively middle-aged. I don't like the fact that the weathermen are now wearing like shirts and jeans to do the weather on the BBC. I'm like, where are their suits? Why are they not smartly dressed? Though last night before Country File, such a middle-aged sentence. Last night before Country File, the guy was wearing a check shirt that had the top three buttons undone and a pair of jeans. And I was like, no, we're descending into slovenliness. And I think I've turned into my grandparents.
It's indicative of the turning of the worm, isn't it? Really, it's everything's going downhill.
Yes, I don't want to be one of those people.
Are we actually 70? Are we from the 1870s? I mean, I don't think I'm that. I'm going to let the weather people wear what they want.
Okay.
Just make sure you speak properly.
Yes, and enunciate and have clear diction, because everybody talks like this on films. I've turned into my grandpa.
Oh no, that is a thing. No, the mumbling thing is a thing. That is definitely a thing.
I've turned into my grandpa. My grandpa would watch the television. He'd be like, "Oh Christ, speak properly! Oh for God's sake!" Oh! And like that. And that's what I'm turning into. I'm sliding into my grandpa.
Well, this is not Limited Time Only. It's not Limited Time Only anymore. This is Grumpy Old Women.
Yeah. I don't want to be a grumpy old person. I'm fun. I dance on tables at parties. Anyway, Suze, what does burnout look like for you?
Segway.
Seamless.
Well, burnout looks for me, it kind of looks like how I am at the moment, really.
Right, okay.
I'm sort of up and down, I would say, at the moment. And this morning, my daughter, 8:15, they were munching toast, and she suddenly went, "Mummy, I've got a feeling I'm meant to be at another school this morning for a choir rehearsal." And I thought for about 2 seconds and went, realising I was meant to get her to our friend's house for 8:20. So this is in four minutes. So I was like, kids, right, move. No time to clean your teeth. I shoved them out the door, got to the friend's house in time. And the friend said to me, has she got a packed lunch? And I was like, no. So this lovely friend of mine, Rowena, thank God for you, made her a packed lunch. I'm going to buy her a bottle of wine. Not Beatrice, my friend's mum. Her friend's mum. I'm struggling to cope with the volume of things that are happening at the moment. And I'm putting them in my phone, but then I'm not looking at the calendar, which is pretty much a mistake there.
So it's sort of overwhelm for you.
Yes, overwhelm. And then I get completely, and then I sort of get stasis because I can't. Is stasis the right word or paralysis? I'm like, I can't do this. I also get, I'm not getting enough sleep probably, although I'm trying to get better about this. And what, I'll just tell you one sneaky thing I've done is, because my daughter was going to bed so late and even with the clocks going back, it just it didn't seem to have shifted. So we've sneakily moved her clock in her room forward an hour.
Brilliant.
So she thinks it's later than it is. So she just is going to bed, and which is great. And we are going to bed a bit earlier. And I am doing other stuff as well, but we can get to that. But burnout for me is extreme tiredness, a sort of feeling that I can't cope with all the things that are going on. And it sort of has this snowball effect. You know, you're tired, so you don't want to exercise, although exercise would make you feel better. But I did. I exercise. I went for a run yesterday as well. So that's good. I'm very aware of it, but I knew that this time of year would bring challenges.
Yeah.
And also it's already, you know, the build up to Christmas. It's the school Christmas fair, winter fair in 3 weeks, and I'm one of the sort of organisers, and I'm starting to have little palpitations about that.
Yes.
It's absolutely fine, Esther. It's absolutely fine.
It's all fine. We'll just move all the clocks. It's fine. I think the clock moving is great. I'm sure I did that with my two. You know, I'm sure I told them. And I did the thing as well when they were younger, which I think a lot of parents do, where with the week leading up to the clocks changing, I adjust their bedtime a little bit every night. I did. Mm. I used to do that with them when they were younger. But it's a lot when they're young, isn't it? With the run up to Christmas, because there's so many things. See, I do have a busy calendar leading up to Christmas, and I'm already thinking, oh, we haven't got a free weekend now till after Christmas, and that makes me feel a bit sick in my mouth. Mm. It's a lot when they're little, and yours are little. They're still primary school.
Nativity play. Two lots of Christmas shows to do, carol concerts, and then my daughter does so many other extracurricular stuff. She's got a concert on Wednesday night for the school choir and a dance show on Sunday, and she was dancing all weekend, rehearsals all day Saturday and Sunday afternoon. Felt like I didn't see her, really.
Yeah, it's quite intense, isn't it? It's a lot. And the thing is, it's not just your own life that you're navigating. It's two little people and you have a husband, and so it's four people's lives, and then there's extended family and blah, blah, blah. And it can just feel a bit much, can't it?
Yeah, and I think the clock's going, was it back or forwards? I can't remember.
Back. Yeah.
And you think it'll make it. You think you'll get more sleep, but it's very easy to just slip back to the usual bedtime. But I have to say, we've been really good. And on Saturday night, I mean, rock on. I went to bed at 9:30.
Brilliant.
Woo! Saturday night, and I like to get in bed. Thank you, baby.
With my Horlicks.
Yes, that's what I was doing. I mean, with my Horlicks and a good book. And I did go to bed. I was just, go on.
No, I was just thinking about, there's a guy I follow on Instagram. What's his name? Father of Daughters. And about a year ago, he was really burning out. And he said, and he'd been sharing posts about the fact that he doesn't go to bed till very late. And it's because his daughters range from my daughter's age, 17, right down till like little ones of like your kid's age. Mm. He's got four girls. And he said, I stay up late after they've gone to bed because in my head, I'm reclaiming some time for myself. And I wonder if that's potentially what it is with you, because you say you struggle to go to bed. And is it sort of, this is my own bit of time?
Yeah, and it's fitting the stuff in. What happens is I'm not productive in the day because I'm tired. And then I get this second wind.
Yes.
And then I try and fit everything into a sort of 1.5 hour, 2 hour period.
Yes.
Go to bed late and then wake up and it all starts again. But actually, if I go to bed early, I feel so much brighter in the day. I don't feel that kind of heaviness. And it is a sort of depression. And the overwhelm that I get when I'm tired and I don't want to eat loads and I don't just sort of wander around the house like a zombie. Honestly, if people could see me, it's like, what the hell is wrong with that woman?
Well, I think
shuffling around.
I find though, sometimes if there's no, it's very rare that there's no one in the house anymore. But if there isn't anybody in the house, I struggle to do stuff. But if they're in the house, I'm incredibly productive. And somebody was talking to me the other day about you can do this app when you're trying to get work done. What's it called? But it's basically, it's as though you're working alongside somebody, and then that tends to spur you on. So if you're somebody that is better in that kind of environment, it sort of gets you working a bit. Or maybe it's simply, I don't have to think about anything for 5 minutes, and your body just automatically slows down or something. You know, there are no kids
like the end
in
of term,
house.
But every day.
Yeah.
I do struggle. Yeah, I struggle when I'm on my own a lot. I don't like it, which is why I leave WhatsApp messages for people that last 15 minutes. I'm talking to somebody else.
Yeah.
and avoiding all the stuff. I was talking to my husband, the other day. Funny,
wow,
that, isn't
that's,
it?
That's
live together
weird.
And everything. It's unusual. But he was saying that someone at their company had been completely overwhelmed with work and had just kept going and going and going and getting other people's work being put on her and put on her and put on her until eventually just one day just came in and went, I can't do it anymore, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite a common, I think we do often as people try and think we can manage all the stuff and don't want to appear, I don't know, incompetent or let people down. And in the end, you know, I thought to myself the other day, I was like, why is it that I will really, really try my hardest never to let anybody down, but I'm always letting myself down. I will always let myself down above anybody else. And it doesn't matter who they are. I might not even know them. You know, an employer or a potential employer will get my time and my effort rather than me saying, Susie, take yourself for a run because you know it'll make you feel good and it'll be enjoyable. It's this weird, incorrect focus.
Yeah, well, I just think you may have opened a whole can of worms with that sentence, Susie. Why do I put everybody ahead of myself and leave myself to the last, even if it's somebody I don't really know that well? I think that's quite
so weird, isn't it? It's weird.
It's a huge thing and sort of mothering yourself and taking care of yourself of like, I need to go to bed by this time and I need to exercise. And it's almost like this is my baseline. So I need to get this amount of sleep, otherwise I don't function. So that goes in the boundaries before I deal with anything else. And then I need to have some exercise most days. So that goes in my diary and everything else just has to wait a bit. Otherwise I can't function and I burn out and I get overwhelmed. And maybe that's an approach. Because it actually makes me want to give you a really big hug when you say that and go, no, Susie, put yourself first.
I know. But I think it was a good thing to realise. And the realisation came when I was walking back from the park the other day. Because I did go running last week. I mean, the weather is stunning at the moment.
Yeah.
I know we're recording this a little bit earlier than, no, not that much earlier, before this goes out. But, it's very sunny, beautiful autumn weather. The trees look gorgeous. And I knew I had a lot of work to do that day, but I thought, no, I'm going to go for a run. And I ran up to this beautiful park near us and I ran round and I didn't want to go home. So I thought, all right, I'll get a cup of coffee. And I had a phone call that that was coming at a certain time. So I had the phone call in the park and then I finished the phone call and I just went and stood and looked at the trees. And I was just enjoying it so much. And then on the walk home, I rang a very good friend of mine who I don't speak to anywhere near enough because I struggle to ring people as well at the moment. I think you worry about, you worry that you're going to be interrupting them. You worry that you haven't got quite enough time to fit in speaking to them. But I was like, no, I've got plenty of time. And I just know that speaking to her will make me feel better. And it was lovely. And it gave me a chance to think. And you know what? I was so productive that afternoon because I'd had that time.
Yes.
To myself.
You'd had that connection as well.
Yeah. And the fresh air. And I was like, do you know, I can fit it in. I can fit in a run and still do the stuff. And if I don't do all the stuff, I'll have the energy and the reserves to do it, to not beat myself up about it for a start, and then to do it the next day. Yeah, it's a very complicated thing, isn't it? We have to sort of, it's reframing the attitude to existence in a way. And I've got myself into a rut, I think. And I'm really conscious of it. And I'm really trying to And I do feel tons better in the last couple of days. And things I'm doing to stave off burnout. Right, I'm doing stuff before the deadline. Trying,
yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm taking vitamins. I'm taking gut-friendly bacteria. I'm taking cacao. I'm getting outside and exercising. I'm trying to reduce my phone time. That's tricky. And also, I'm getting ready for Christmas early. Sorry, guys, I said it. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, all the adverts have started. 1st of November, out they all spill. And I'm like, no, we'll just wait a bit, guys, for the adverts. Because otherwise I'm going to be over it. And they're all going to be short adverts by the time we hit December. And then it'll be, no, I want the full-length ones. It sounds like you're doing...
Oh, really?
Yeah, it sounds like you're doing all the right... I think that's the thing with burnout, though, isn't it? It's your body going, no, we can't do this anymore. Mm. Stop it. I'm going to literally ground you because you are not living in the way that suits you. And it's almost your body. Mm. I mean, I know I've spoken about the fact I've got an underactive thyroid before, and I get very bad eczema flare-ups. I'm going to touch some wood. Hopefully that's under control now. I know. smutty thoughts enter all our heads.
Touch wood.
Touch wood. But I to me, that was a really big lesson. Like, the thyroid floored me. So it's a case of, when my eczema flares, I go, right, I need to pull everything back. Well, your body's very clever, isn't it? That it goes, no, this isn't working. You've got to, the fact that it grounds you. And so you have to reevaluate. And the thing, it sounds with you, like you know what you should be doing, you know what your body needs, and now it's just implementing yourself and almost, I don't know, not feeling guilty about it, but allowing yourself to put those needs first.
Which is hard, isn't it? We, especially as parents, you know, you're programmed to put your children first, and of course you need to look after them. But if you don't put yourself first, and we've said this before, if you don't put yourself first, you can't look after anyone else.
It's the oxygen mask, isn't it? If the plane's going down, or you need the oxygen mask to come down, you've got to give yourself oxygen to keep your kids alive. And if you go down, then the whole family goes down, you know.
Yes.
So
it's absolutely true.
We interrupt this programme with a you-bash. Tired? Overwhelmed? Burnt out? That's enough about me. If you're feeling overwhelmed and yet another person asks you to do something, why don't you try using this handy phrase? No. You might have to practice it a few times before you get it right. Good luck. Goodbye.
What does bore out look like for you? Do you get bore out? Because I do sometimes.
I do. Yeah, I do get bored. I mean, I get bored by everything I have to do in the house.
God, me too.
God, isn't adult life's boring, isn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah, and I know if, and actually I know we're talking to Hannah in a bit, but I know when she talks about bore out, it's about not using your strengths and your skills, so everything's boring. And I definitely have spells of that where, and it's just because you're not doing things that interest you at all. So if it's just a week of housework, which is rare now actually, but oh God, I can't be asked to get off the sofa. Everything's an effort.
Oh, I know. It is.
Everything's hard.
It is, yeah. You've got to have input. So if you're in the house, if I'm in the house on my own all day, I'm getting no input. Nothing is feeding me to give me any energy or impetus to do anything. So I'm kind of... So this week I've arranged to see a friend on Wednesday because I was like, do you know, I can very easily go through a week not really seeing anybody for any meaningful exchange. Yes, I see people I know in the street or whatever, but it's a hello. Yeah, how are you? Fine.
Yeah. Oh, small talk.
I can't bear small talk. I won't go to parties because I don't like small talk.
I can't bear it. I want to know all the deep... want to know what you think about
just
death.
Go straight into a deep conversation with me at the next kid's party I'm at. I don't want to talk about...
Yeah.
You know... what you're doing for Christmas. I want to know what you feel about the afterlife. Okay? This is the chance.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. That's where I am. I'm so bored by small talk. Yeah. I do it. And sometimes it leads to interesting stuff. But other times it's like, oh God.
I find myself, my eyelids are shutting as I'm talking.
Well, We were in town the other day and we popped into town to get a couple of bits in, and I did, and we ran into about six people we knew. And then there was one friend of ours as he walked towards us with his small son. In fact, I think his wife listened to the podcast. You saw this. We felt it. He felt it. It's like, oh no. Even though he's a really good friend. Oh shit. We've got to stand here and have 10 minutes of how are you? What are you up to? And sometimes that's great. But other times it's like, I just want to do my shopping.
Yeah. Well, yes. So what did you do?
Or just have an interesting chat, yeah.
What did you do? Did you avoid?
Oh, no, we stood and we had the conversation. No, we had the conversation. There was no way of avoiding. And we popped into other shops. We ran into lots of people. And then we were like, Christ, we've got to keep having these conversations.
Oh, because it's the same conversation every time, isn't it? That's the problem.
It is. It's this. And small talk, I struggle. I do it and I can do it well, but...
On the train, you know, on train platform in the morning, sometimes you've got things to do. If I'm going commuting in to do something and I've got, you know, to work, I've got to check, look at what the heck I'm meant to be doing, because I leave everything to the last minute, as you've discovered. So I'm looking at what I'm meant to be doing and I'm like, I need this time, and I spot someone I know and I will sort of hot foot it to to the other. I'll slowly turn away, hope they don't spot me, and hot foot it to their own platform. I'm sure people do it to me as well. They must do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And also, I do that sometimes as well. But do you know what I like, though? I like meeting new people that I don't know. So I love meeting somebody. It doesn't really happen so much anymore because everyone's on their phone. But sometimes you'd sit on the train and you'd start talking to somebody and you'd know all about their life story. And you'd really have a brilliant hour-long conversation. And you get off the train and you never see them again. And I love meeting new people. I love finding out about new people and chatting with them. I find that quite energising.
That is an amazing thing, though, if you think how many of those conversations you've had, how many of those connections with people. And they are. It's intense. It's hour and a half or longer, possibly. And all ages, all different backgrounds, and then you never see them again. And somehow or other, they've left a little imprint on you, a positive little energy spark. I think that's lovely, actually. We're all connected. The whole world's connected in that way, isn't it, really, if you think about it? Those little train trips.
Yeah. And also what I like about meeting new people is the fact that they don't know me. So I'm normally very chatty, overly chatty, but then some days I don't feel like that, and if I'm quiet people sort of think there's something wrong with me, but it's not, it's just I'm not so chatty today. So when you meet somebody new, they have no idea who you are, and you can present whatever side of yourself or whatever bits you want to present, but more than that, I'm just interested in hearing about other people's lives. I think people are fascinating. I love people. Some people don't like people, do they? But I think people are, the majority of people are lovely. Yeah. We've all just got different opinions on how things should be done. But actually, when you break it down, we kind of all want the same thing. And I find people fascinating, and I like to meet as many people as I can, which has nothing to do with burnout. Well, I suppose it is, in the sense that I find that energising. Yeah. And like you were saying, if you don't get outside and you don't have some connection with somebody, and if you're trapped in the house, not seeing anybody, it really affects you.
Or you're trapped in a job where that's all you're doing. And you're overloaded and you don't have time for any other, you don't have time for proper connection. It's the lack of and the too much of, isn't it?
Because I crave connection and communication and I love meeting people, but I am also somebody who really, really needs time alone. And I get quite overwhelmed because there's always people in our house now. Ian works from home. My daughter is at college, so she's only in for half a day. There's only one half a day a week, about 3 hours on a Tuesday afternoon when I'm in the house on my own. And I don't think I've said this before on here. I hope I haven't. But at the end of COVID, the day my husband went back to work, this is going to sound very dramatic, I sat on the kitchen floor and I cried for about 3 hours. And I think it was a feeling of release that I got some space. And I love my husband so much. He's brilliant. He's such a lovely person. And I love my kids. But it was really weird. They left and I thought, I'm going to do all these things today. And I didn't. I just stayed in my dressing gown, and we've got a kitchen island. And I sat on the floor and I looked out the window because I thought, nobody is going to walk into this kitchen and say, why are you sat on the floor and why are you sobbing? It was like this feeling of freedom that I could just literally, I didn't know what I was crying about. It was just really cathartic. I just sat on the floor. Now, my dog was next to me and I just sobbed for a good hour. And then I just didn't move. And I was just... It was just such I suppose it was a feeling of normality as well, but no one's going to go, are you okay? What are you doing on the floor? It was like, no, there's no one here to ask me anything. And I found that really liberating and needed.
Yes, absolutely. And the other day when I was in the park and I said I'd sort of stood there and looked at the... And I was crying then and I thought, do you know what? I think this is okay. No one can see me. And I'm not going to feel bad about crying or silly, or I'm just going to let myself do it because I need to do it. And it's good. It's good to let it out. There's something in there that needs to come out. And I felt so much better after that whole... I was probably out for about 2 hours. And I just love being outside. And it did, and it helped. The crying helped. And I think it's important that we let it out sometimes.
Oh my God, absolutely. I'm such a crier and I've always got sunglasses on, and quite often that is because when I walk the dog I'm listening to a podcast and something makes me cry. But it's a release, isn't it? And I remember in the summer I went and worked in a park up the road because I just felt like I can't be in these same four walls all the time. Yeah. And that's the thing with working from home and working for yourself, isn't it? But it's you'll never get the balance absolutely right, but it's... I'm quite aware of... I know when I'm slipping into burnout. I'm slipping into burnout when I start getting very snappy. Yes. My fuse gets short. I start listing things. We haven't decorated this and this still needs doing and that. And Ian's like, what are you... Like, you're stressing me out. And it gets more and more manic. And it's like my foot is stuck on the accelerator and I can't stop going. And then bore out for me... because I can't be bothered to get off the sofa. But a friend of mine was saying last year or the year before, she's very empathetic like me. We're both criers. And she said, I don't even cry anymore. I don't. If something bad happens, I don't really care. If I see something sad on the telly, that's when I know that I'm not in a good place. Yeah. And that's what I'm like. If I don't care, if you're telling me something and I'm not crying, if you're telling me something joyful or something sad and I am not... fighting to hold the tears in, then I'm not in a good place. If I'm not like shaking, going, then that means that I'm probably... it's sort of an alarm bell goes off. You're not in a good place because you're not feeling teary about this. Either that, or I'm just amazingly balanced, but that's never happened. So it's really interesting. I'm either snappy, irritable, everything makes me angry, too stressed, overwhelmed, burning out, or I'm not crying at this. I don't really care that your dad's dead. You know, not that's extreme.
That's so
interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like,
no, I totally know what you mean.
That then I'm... then it's almost like everything's shut down. Mm-hmm. And so neither are good states for me to be in. It's like a real apathy. It's a real apathy to life. And I'm not somebody with apathy to life.
I think mine's rage about things. I was getting very angry about stuff that I really didn't need to get angry about. Like things that, you know, I was like, why am I so cross about this? When I'm breathing kind of just in the top half of my chest, that sort of panic, that's burnout for me.
Yes.
And I just need to reset. It's very hard. It's self-discipline, but it's kindness. It's not discipline in a harsh way. It's a kindness that we need to do for ourselves, and that's very hard to do. But when it's sunny, and you know, it's... I just think if I can get outside just for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, well, preferably an hour, then I'll feel better. And sleep. I've just got to go to sleep, and I'm learning it slowly, learning
good.
That I need to sleep.
Well, it's good, and it's good that you're doing that though. And I think there was part of me... In fact, I saw somebody who used to come to my drama group. She's in her mid-20s and she put a post on a couple of years about, can't believe I still feel like this at 23, but at 24, I'll be 24 next week and I'll feel different. And I was like, love, you're never going to feel... You're just always going to be learning, always. There's no... There is no day where you stop learning. It's... Your whole life, you're like, oh, I didn't know this about myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, the report that I did with Hannah full disclosure, listeners, we've recorded the Hannah interview, but I know we didn't cover this, but when I did my report with Hannah, it said that I have a lot of strategy skills, very, very high up, and I didn't know that really. And actually it makes sense. I am quite a strategic person. I can see solutions, but I'm 45 and it's taken me to this point in my life to go, oh, I'm quite good at strategy, you know? And so there's just, and that's so, I love that. I want to find out every nugget I can about everything and about how I operate and what's best and
yes.
who's this person and what are they like.
How
and,
good.
And it's so yeah. brilliant to keep learning.
Yes. How good. I mean, how good to know how you work.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You just plug me in for half an hour and I'm good to go.
Well, I mentioned this in the last series, that the book by Jon Kabat-Zinn, Wherever I Go,
oh, yes.
There I Am. And it's exactly the
there
same.
I am.
However
yeah.
old I get, there I am. And it's, you know, there's an essential
yes.
you and you're not going to change. I'm not going to suddenly get, you know, wiser when I hit 46 in, you know, 5 months' time. I'm going to still be the absolute shambles. I think, in fact, I think I'm getting more of a shambles as I've got older. Because as you...
No, I don't think you have.
Really? I think there's more. Was so much more to cope with. Every year, there's more to deal with. I think that's where... I've just always been a shambles.
I don't think you're a shambles. I think you're amazing. You do the Archers. You're doing voiceovers. You're raising two beautiful children who are brilliant. One of them who already has a successful acting career. You have a marriage. You have a home. You're incredible, Susie. You're
oh,
doing
thank
this.
Thank you.
You're amazing. It's just nurturing yourself and putting
yeah.
yourself to bed at a sensible time, and because you deserve that.
Oh, thank you.
Do you know what? When I come and stay, Susie, when we do our live, I'll tuck you in.
Oh,
after
thanks.
We've done our live with our patrons on the 30th of November, I'll tuck you into bed and I'll read you a story
oh,
and I'll stroke
you.
Your hair.
Thanks. Oh, I'm just going to go and have a little nap now and think about that. Thanks,
yeah,
Esther.
Yeah.
Right, ladies and gent. Hello, Malcolm. How's your sciatica? Welcome to Carol's Full Body Burnout. Anyone new today?
Yes, me.
Excellent. Fresh blood. Well, just try and keep up. All right, love? Any injuries?
I'm having physio for a back problem and my right knee's a bit dodgy.
Don't worry about injuries. We don't let them stop us. And the rest of you know the drill. We pop till we drop. Let's get started. And march. Pick those knees up. It's the school run. You've forgotten the packed lunches, so you have to run back. Knees up.
Oh, that's a bit...
You're not going to burn out if you don't push yourself, new girl. You've got to have some self-respect. Grapevine to the left. Drink wine to the right. And again. And again. Overdo it. Now, Julie from accounts is off sick. Who's going to pick up her work? Arms up. Higher. And you're not sleeping well at the moment. Arms up.
This is starting to hurt.
Bring it on! In-laws are coming to stay. Squat. You've agreed to organise the raffle at the PTA Winter Fair. Squat. And next door's cats need feeding. Jump! Time for press-ups. It's the Works Charity 10K run and you're in the boss's team. Push! Christmas is around the corner. Carry that shopping. Push! Don't forget the kids' nativity plays. Push! And the big one. You've got flu! Push, push, push!
Please stop! This is too much for me.
You're burnt out. Great effort for your first class. Stick around for my next one, Carol's Meditation and Yoga Hour, and come back in 2 months to do Carol's Full Body Burnout all over again. Come on, everyone. Relax.
I think of myself as a patron of the arts. I buy theatre tickets. Encore! I attend cinematic presentations.
Can I see some ID, madam? This is a 12 certification.
Oh, blast. And I adore a good art exhibition. Who's this by? It's just blobs.
Picasso?
Oh. But it's only now that I can call myself a true patron, as I've become a patron of Limited Time Only podcast. My support enables Susie and Esther to make LTO the best it can be, and gets me bonus content and experiences I don't want to miss. I've just signed up for the first patron-only LTO live online. To sign up, go to patreon.com and search for Limited Time Only podcast. There's a link in the show notes and in the LTO Instagram bio. I'll see you over there. I'm just off to the opera. Toodaloo!
So you're our guinea pig, basically, Hannah. For
Excellent.
for this new system, which we're trying out. Because we want to be a bit more snazzy, if it's possible.
I'm happy to be your snazzy guinea pig.
Today, we have our first returning guest, the fabulous Hannah Miller, who was a guest in season one 2 years ago. Hannah is a strengths-based coach, award-winning speaker, writer, and founder of the company Sidekick. Through Sidekick, Hannah works with individuals and groups, helping them discover what their strengths are so that they can achieve their potential and live a fulfilling and purposeful life. Hannah says, I started Sidekick because I believe for the world to progress, it needs unique, brave, and exceptional leaders, leading their life, their teams, their communities brilliantly. We talked to Hannah about how she does this and how not working with your strengths and natural preferences can lead to burnout or bore out. Welcome back to the show, Hannah Miller.
Hannah, thank you. I mean, you have been on before, so we're thrilled just for a start off that you actually wanted to come back. I think that's a good sign. It's vindication that we're doing something correctly.
I loved it last time. It's good to be back.
It's great to have you, especially because since then we've been following you on Instagram, obviously, and you've just been enriching our lives daily since 2021. There you go. So thank you for all that as well. But we'll definitely talk about all that stuff during the course of this chat. But yeah, we're thrilled to have you on. And also, I know the listeners will be thrilled because I know that you're going to give us some great insights into what you do and help. I think you're just going to help everybody today, so that's brilliant, including Esther and myself, obviously.
Yes, and I might be saying slightly less today because my voice keeps going very squeaky because I'm on the tail end of a cold, so that's probably a good thing for everybody.
Because she's been smoking too much.
I've been chuffing away.
Susie, you need to take advantage of Esther's quietness today and just fully, you know, say what you need to say while she's quiet.
I mean, she always, I'm always in the background, never get a chance, never get a word in. We're both as bad as each other. We thought we'd just start by saying, by asking what you've been up to in the last couple of years, because you came on in 2021. It was kind of our second or third episode ever. And you were talking about your business, obviously, and the coaching that you do and the purpose pursuit. And we'll talk about that again today. But it'd just be nice to know what you've been, that was sort of mid-pandemic. What have you been up to and how has the business grown and expanded in that time? So it's just to see what you've been doing.
That's a really nice question because it made me go, gosh, so much has changed, hasn't it, since then?
Yeah.
So work-wise, I keep doing what I'm doing in terms of supporting people, helping people to understand more about themselves. I've done some really fun projects since then, some more collaboration, which I've really enjoyed. I've been working with a woman called Amanda Perry to support people with neurodiversity and understanding their unique strengths. That's been really fun. I've been working on quite a few women in leadership projects, which I've also loved doing, with some great organisations that are trying to elevate women who seem to get so far up the kind of corporate ladder and then it kind of stops. Mm-hmm. So I've been involved in some projects there. And I've been involved in some mothering of my children who are a couple years older.
Just a little bit of that.
Yeah, a little bit of that going on, growing up three lads. And also kind of continuing to work on how do I make the purpose pursuit, which I'm sure will come up, accessible to as many people as possible. And that's like a big question. Also, Zoe has joined my team since we last talked. Zoe does all the comms and engagement for me and she's fantastic. So yeah, quite a bit of change.
That is a lot. It's a lot, isn't it? You know, it's wide ranging and yeah, fitting in your family as well. I mean, that's always, well, it's like, it's that, isn't it? That's the kind of base level and everything has to fit around that. It's fantastic. And I know Esther is currently doing the purpose pursuit. Yeah.
Yes.
And that's just started. And I know you have cohorts. And I just wondered if you could tell us a bit about that. And Esther can probably chip in.
Squeak in a little bit of information.
If I start, then Esther can say from her perspective so far. Yeah, we run the Purpose Pursuit as a cohort for a couple of reasons, really. I think you get the shared learning by doing it with other people and hearing other people's life experiences and realising there's a lot of difference between us, but also similarity in hearing people's stories. And just the collective learning experience actually helps people finish the course. That's for me, it's really important that people finish. I could just say, oh, I want to sell a product, but actually that would make me a bit sad if people didn't get the outcomes. So doing it as a cohort actually increases the likelihood of people getting through the material and actually completing it, because they've journeyed together. And it also means that I kind of shift attention to that group of people for that period of time. So it's important that they're at one of my number one priorities in this season, which is why I don't run it all the time, because, you know, I shift to do other things the rest of the year. I normally run it as like two cohorts a year. So I'll probably do it again late January, because New Year is another time, and probably won't run it in the summer. So, yeah, that cohort's just begun. We've got a lovely group of people. There's a couple of, you know, odd people in there, Esther, you know, just like that. No, there's not. There's not at all. There's an amazing group. And actually we've got people from their 20s right through to people who are actually really close to retirement and everything in between. And I love that, because it shows that actually this is to be very, very cliched, understanding ourselves really is a life journey. And that every time we hit a transition point again, there's another bit of reflection to do. It's not like you do this work and tick the box and go, right, now every life transition I'm sorted for it. Actually, we hit those when our children are born, we hit those when we get married, we hit those when we leave uni, we hit those when our children leave the home, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's a kind of collegiality around that, which I love, that can be supportive in each direction of age.
Yeah, and you've just started, Esther.
I have started, and I'm loving it. I love anything like this. I'm very into psychology. I'm very into understanding how people work. I'm very into nuances and human behaviour. I feel like I've been quite lost for a while. I think I had a dream of something I wanted to be an actress from a child. That's all I wanted to do. But all of my adult life, I've gone out of my way to avoid it. So I'm an actress who doesn't act. I've had opportunities to have agents, haven't taken it. I've had opportunities for auditions. I had a meeting with someone from Coronation Street in the summer. I love you, send me your stuff, haven't sent it. Why not? I don't think I want to do it. But I want to get the clarity. You know what I mean? So I love doing this, but I think I've identified myself as that my entire life, but I haven't. There's something that holds me back from doing it, and I could do it and I don't do it. Now, what is that about? So I've constantly got this sort of feeling of I'm a failure because I'm not doing the thing that I say I'm do, but then I don't put myself forward for it. So I really wanted to get some clarity, delve deep. What are my strengths? What am I actually really good at? And do I want to do this? And if so, go for it. And if not, then don't, and move on, and actually reimagining myself as a completely different person is actually really exciting. That maybe that's not who I am. Maybe that's just not who I am. Maybe that's just what I needed to be and was a good coping mechanism when I was a kid. So
interesting.
So I'm loving it.
With all that that Esther said, what is the purpose, the end goal, I suppose?
Yeah, really good question. So by the end of the course, I would hope that Esther will have more clarity on who she is, more clarity on what she does best. I mean, I know she already knows what she loves to do, but really sharpen that knowledge to be really clear, actually, this is what I really do best. And also, what are my personal struggles? What am I not going to find so easy to do? We will look a bit more at mindset as we go a bit further down the course. So as we get into the second half, we'll look at how do we get in our own way, perfectionism, drivers, imposter syndrome, and also being a bit more specific about imposter syndrome, because I think unless you are a sociopath, you are going to have a level of imposter syndrome. So what causes you to have that is going to be different. So for my husband, who is a learner, he's more likely to feel like an imposter when he doesn't feel he knows enough. And yet he probably knows more than a lot of people because of the fact he's a learner. That isn't the thing that makes me feel like an imposter at all. It's completely different drivers leading to my imposter syndrome. Right. So we'll look at that together. And then we start to imagine what might be in our future and our values underneath that. That's another important part. So many courses around career do bypass values, and you've got to know what your personal values are. Not everything can be a value. You can think lots of things are good, but you can't live by every value. And lots of people off the course have found that part quite illuminating and think, actually, I can't do that because it's just not it's compromising a value, and I need to just put that to bed because this is more important than that. So that's where we should hope to get Esther. And Esther said from the start, for her, it's clarity. And so for some people, it's different motivations, but Esther wants clarity to make her yes and her no, I guess, for what's next.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Absolutely. And this episode is about burnout. Do you find that a lot of people come to you with burnout because they're sort of not aligned?
Yes. So the burnout thing has become, as you will both know, really popular topic, you know, particularly since the pandemic. I think the recognition of so many frontline workers, we're talking about it in a way we perhaps didn't before. I think there's been this recognition of life feeling squeezed, we're juggling a lot. The boundary around work feels to seep into increasing amounts of life. And one of my particular interesting burnout has come from having my own episodes of being, you know, close to that. And the lens that I try to bring to this conversation is that there are systemic parts about burnout, which are the system we're in, the stuff around us. If you work for the NHS, there are issues around burnout, for example, that are out of your control. And we all have our own versions of that. But then there is a part of the burnout problem, which is us. And that's an uncomfortable truth. And when people, again, if we're using Esther as an example, when you get to know your strengths well and what you do best, sometimes you're in burnout because a couple of your strengths have gone into total overdrive and they are controlling you rather than you controlling them. And that's the kind of, that's the bit of gold I want to bring to the conversation of, we can't have everything, not everything is outside of control. We are in control of us. And when we understand our drivers and we understand our motivations and what we love, sometimes we've let those things go AWOL or overdrive, and that contributes to our burnout. And that's part of my own story, which I'm very willing to share, but I'll stop speaking for a minute and let you respond.
No, it's great.
It is brilliant. It is brilliant. I think, I know for me, like ideas, I know that I can burn myself out by often feeling like I have my foot on the accelerator and I can't take it off, like it's jammed and I'm going, you know, almost sort of my head's going to explode. And then what happens is I have to turn all social media off, I have to turn everything off, and I have to go to ground because I've just overstimulated myself.
Yeah, I kind of find that it comes in, I mean, maybe every 2 months or something. Like I'll go, okay, I've got loads of energy, I'm going to do, oh, okay, I'm done. I can't do any more. Stop.
Yeah.
Week later. No, I'm all right now. Okay, let's go again. And it is just like this kind of cycle that happens, just keeps happening. And I was saying to Esther a few weeks ago that I was scared about this time of year. I mean, it's been great because the weather's been fantastic, and but now it is, you know, we are in autumn and it is going to get darker and colder. And I was like, I'm scared because the last 2 years I felt awful for kind of the whole of November into December. And it's ruined the run up to Christmas. And because I've just got no energy, I feel burnt out and stressed, and everything gets completely overwhelming.
I think your point there, Susie, about it being cyclical for you and happening every couple of months, I really relate to that. And I think it's important to say on this podcast, I have not nailed this at all, but I have got a knowledge and understanding of both what I do that isn't helpful and also what I need. The things that I need to keep me healthy, the things that are good for me and good for my soul, but also where I become my own worst enemy. And I think there is the change in season that for lots of us is a big deal. It does make a difference to how we feel. And we've got to maybe adjust our expectations of ourselves in that time. Maybe we operate at 80% at that time of year. And so the question then is, well, what does 80% well look like, rather than I'm trying to do 100% and then failing and then crashing? So I wonder whether there's another thing that has been really central to my personal growth over the last few years is this idea of accepting my limitations. What can I not do, even that I'd like to, unless something else isn't in my life? What are the limitations of my season? You know, what are the limitations of having children? What are the limitations? I don't mean that negatively, but the reality is, any life path you choose creates limitations for you. And And I think even just thinking about this season, I think, what are the limitations of this season? And how do I not expect myself to behave how I do when I'm at tip-top performance? And I guess if you're expand on that idea a little bit more, if you're an athlete, as you're preparing for race day, you are at your A game. But in a season when you're maybe not in the middle of race season, you aren't going to perform like you do at that moment. And why do we think that we should always keep that level of performance?
Yeah.
And maybe for some of our personalities, and I imagine you two and me, we're similar in this kind of, we've got this energy, which is like sprint mentality, that perhaps that we have to build in respite from that sprint. And not necessarily think we've got to catch it before it becomes a crash, I guess. So if you sprint and then catch it before you go into that, because I can go there and I'm suddenly like, I don't want to see anybody. I resent everything everyone's asking me to do. I resent everything I'm doing for my family. I resent, you know, I get to that resentful mode. Yes. If I can do something about it pre that point, everyone's a winner if that happens. Yes. I mean, I'm just thinking about this as we're talking, and perhaps personality-wise, we have to make peace with some people who are listening to this podcast will be more even temperaments, and others of us are sprinters that need to recuperate.
Mm, that's really interesting. To think of yourself as an athlete is a really good analogy. It's almost like this time of year, we're like little hamsters.
Have you read Catherine Bay's book, Wintering? Yeah, that's that. I read that and she talks about the fact, and I get like this. When it gets to autumn, I'm just a very different person. I become about nesting and I want to be in the house, and I ambition is still there, but it's a different ambition. Whereas at the beginning of the year, I don't want to be in the house. I'm like, let's go and do stuff. And I read The Success Myth by Emma Gannon. I don't know if you've read it.
I'm currently reading
it. Brilliant book. And she talks about the great resignation that happened during the pandemic when everybody left their jobs because everybody suddenly was like, well, what's my life about? And this sort of, this very, as humans, we're not supposed to be going 100% constantly. We're supposed to have moments for reflection, and we feel, majority of people feel guilty because they haven't produced something. I hear it from everybody I talk to. Oh, I'm not working at my best today. I didn't achieve anything today. But just, we've got to just be and reflect, and it can't always be like that. It's not healthy. It's unachievable.
Do you think the pandemic changed our mindset? I struggle to stay in the house because I don't want to be trapped in the house. So I struggle to kind of relax in my own house in a way, which is bad. I mean, we're not getting to me because we'll just be here for 5 hours with me moaning about my brain. But do you think, let's go back to my original question. Do you think the pandemic has massively influenced the way we, you know, deal with life?
I think what happened in the pandemic, from my perspective, is that a whole group of people had a collective experience of both trauma, change, that meant that at the same time, lots of people asked a question of, what do I want life to look like? What parts of this life have been really good? There was some moments that were really lovely. Breakfast time was much nicer in our house during the pandemic than it is now. It's like, get up, you know, get out, throw a banana at a child, you're late, you know, that that's not so good again. And I think there was this moment in time of people also recognizing their humanity and their limitations, their lack of control over their life, that made us all reassess at the same time. And I think added to that, any life major event, so we'll all have our own versions of this. So for me, around 2016 actually is another season of my life where I would talk about pre-2016 and post-2016 Hannah, because there was a lot of difficult circumstances for me in that year. And I don't look at myself as the same person because I see things differently because of that. And I think my understanding of myself also, what pain does to you was impacted by that, and what matters. But I think what happened in the pandemic was we all, in some way, shape or form, had this experience together. So it augmented this idea of what do we want life to be. And what I think is happening maybe, and I'm saying this out loud for the first time, I wonder whether there's a whole load of us that are pretty disappointed that we're pretty much back where we were. And And I sit in traffic sometimes and I'll have this moment where I think, do you remember when you used to go on a road and there was nobody on it? And I'll sit there in traffic and going, here we are again. And it's like this metaphor for the fact so much of life has just hit pre-pandemic expression. And inside we're thinking, I don't want it to be like this. So perhaps there's more dissonance because we don't want it. So, I mean, I haven't hypothesized this anywhere else other than here, but I think that's maybe what's occurred. And there's just there's the group feeling and the group think in a positive way around the fact that actually I don't want it to be like that anymore, or I want this to be different.
I feel overwhelmed more easily, possibly.
I think that's fair. And I think going back to the burnout question and the thing around strengths, if I just give a couple of examples there for people who are listening of how strengths can lead into that. So Esther gave an example. She said she has lots of ideas. If she doesn't monitor that, that can then become really consuming. I can't turn my brain off. I don't know how to stop. There'll be some people listening who really love to have responsibility. They enjoy autonomy. They like volunteering and saying, I'll do it. And they like that sense of ownership.
This is probably Susie.
Hi there. Talking to me.
Okay, Susie. So listen carefully. And then the problem with that is, if that's left unchecked, you've got all these things you've said yes to, these responsibilities, and you, whether it's been driven from people pleasing or ambition or whatever, and you're like, oh my gosh, I've completely left this unchecked, and now I can't handle the amount of responsibility I've got. So that's a strength, because actually people with responsibility can absolutely handle that stuff, and they want the autonomy that's gone into past strength into unhelpful. You might have somebody listening on this call who is like very productive and enjoys goals and likes to get stuff done. Again, if you don't know how to temper that, it means that even when you're meant to be relaxing, you don't know how to stop. And I think I know when I'm not good is when I am like in this place where I haven't kind of closed the stress cycle, to use that language, and I find myself refreshing, checking like all the different channels, checking my emails, checking my text message, checking Instagram, checking my email again, round. And I'm like, what on earth are you doing and why are you doing it? And it's like I'm on this uncontrollable treadmill that shows me that the thing within me around wanting to do something that kind of matters, wanting to be making a valid contribution, has gone totally into overdrive.
Oh, I'm so the same with that.
And then I think one last thing I'd say is people who are very relational or very empathetic, or they're really good at giving to other people. You know, the solution, which I think so much of social media suggests, is stop being so giving, start to say no, be boundaried, you know, give no F's about anybody else. That is not helpful advice to somebody who is naturally quite a giving person. They've just got to learn to do it with boundary. If everyone becomes human takers, the whole world's going to collapse.
Yes.
It's awful. It's an awful set of advice, in my opinion.
That's really interesting. Like that last point really, not that I would say I'm particularly, I don't know, giving. I don't know. But I think that's very interesting. Yeah, exactly. You don't want everyone to go, well, no, I can't help, or I can't volunteer, or because then what will happen to the world?
It's learning how to have your strengths in that window of tolerance, going back to the language that people are using at the moment, which has really resonated with me. Because actually, to just say to somebody who actually does like to give to others, or likes to see other people make progress, or whatever it might be, to give advice which is just don't do that, is actually going to just kill a part of that person's soul.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
There's nothing good about that. It's just got to be healthy.
What's interesting to me as well is my husband's doing it as well, doing the course as well. And it was so fascinating to read his report, because he is, to understand him better, because I'm very in touch with my emotions. I'm very analytical. I'm very sort of always aware of everything, to hyper aware of everything. And he's not so much. But then to read how he processes things and how I process things has already changed my perception of things. I get very frustrated, because if I ask him a question, it's a yes or no answer to me. But to him, he'll go, let me think about that. And I'm going, oh, for Christ's sake, come on. I just want yes or no. And now it's understanding that he just processes it differently. He goes, oh, let me think. And I'm going, oh, my God, just answer the question.
That's really interesting. And do you know what? I looked back on my loads of school reports.
Yes.
And all glowing, obviously. But the but there was the same thing came up every single time, even as a young, like 11, 12, 13, needs to have more patience with her peers, which is something, and I was glad I'd read it because it fed into my, I think I am a lot better now, but it did, it,
no,
it was continuing
not.
Into my Ooh. 20s. It's, shut up. I've never said that to Esther. I feel awful. I was only joking.
I know.
because it went into my 20s and working in my 20s. Because, you know, as an actor as well, you're working with other people all the time. And I was like, oh, my goodness. And I started to recognise it in my daughter as well. But I was like, well, I'm not a bad person. I think I just, there's something. And it's that inability to see how someone can't understand what you're understanding. And obviously, I don't understand loads of other stuff. But yeah, I think Esther and I are actually the same person often. We're incredibly similar. But that's I could see it being a very useful thing in how to deal with all kind of relationships when you're working with other people or in your family to see, well, you see things that way and I see them that way. So we've got to give each other, there has to be some compromise and we've got to give each other the room to get into the same space.
And I think what Esther said is really true, is that when you realise, okay, I'm just expecting them to behave like me and actually they're just very different in the way they think, is so, so helpful. And also knowing what your person, like you just said, that's really interesting, having patience with peers. You probably got the kind of strengths that are really quick reacting and quick to get going and actually just want to crack on and get the job done. And it's like people are holding back the pace of production with their thinking. That I don't think I'm that different to either of you two, because Esther and I've got very similar strengths. And I'm a trustee of a charity and I've got this terrible reputation of when we're talking about something, I'll say, well, it's a no-brainer. And then they're like, that basically shuts down everybody else. And so now I have to be really careful to not be as kind of like, why are we still talking about this? Yeah. It's obvious what we need to do. Because maybe A, I'm wrong, or B, there is more than one right way.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things I'm learning about myself.
I was just going to mention, because I've seen some posts that you'd written about bore out as well. And I was thinking this all kind of leads on to that, because
this is important.
There's something about quick, let's do this. But there's also I've done it now. Mm. I'm bored. Mm. And and things are boring. I mean, lots of life is incredibly boring and repetitive. Mm. And I just would love to hear you talk about what Borat is and how it all relates to this stuff.
Just to be clear, that's Borat, not Borat.
Borat, not Borat.
Not such a barrier.
No, not Borat. Bore out rather than burn out. Yeah. So burnout is more when we have been going full pelt and even stuff that we really enjoy has got too much because we have gone wild with it rather than managing energy, managing how much of a good thing that we're doing. That's often what burnout is, whether that's systemic reasons or our own or whatever. Bore out is more the concept that actually there are people can be just as frustrated with life, but it's because they're doing too much stuff that doesn't give them personally joy. They are having to spend too much of the time doing things, behaving in ways that are not really who they are. And that actually can give us low energy too. So if you think about one of your best days, it's when you've got this sweet spot of doing something that you love, but you also get that chance to recuperate and to, replenish. So for example, if I'm doing stuff on the road when I'm working with a group of people, so tomorrow I've got an in-person event, next week I've got one on the Tuesday, that's fine. But if I then go into another week where I'm doing it every single day, that is then I am not good. I haven't balanced things well and I'm burnt out. On the flip side, if I have a week where I don't do any of that, I'm underproductive, grouchy. I start to question the meaning of my existence. I start looking for a job. And other ridiculous things. And my husband is like, what are you doing? And I move into this complete other. So it is about this place in between, both space in between both of those. If I do too much, I get like crabby and exhausted. If I do the right amount, I'm energized and brought to life by it. And if I don't do enough, I don't feel like I have any point.
Yes.
Totally.
Do you feel bored? Because I'll go, I feel bored. I don't get bored very often. It's not like, oh, bored. Like sometimes kids say, and you go, you can't be bored.
It's like an unproductive. I actually become underproductive in those times. I procrastinate till I'm under pressure in those times. I don't do the thing I'm supposed to be doing. I'm trying to do some writing at the moment. And so I'll end up not doing it at all in those moments and just sit there. And then I make bad choices that aren't good for me. So then this is what I do. I'll then go to bed even later than I should be and like sleep deprive myself. I'll eat really bad food, like massive pieces of white bread with zero health in it. And I start to make choices that then perpetuate this dull feeling rather than being, what are you doing? This is all not good for you.
Yes. Why do we do that, though?
I don't know.
Why do we self-sabotage?
I don't know.
I'm fascinated by that because, honestly, it's like you're me. I'm sure Esther's the same as well. That why do we perpetuate? Because I think I know what I'm doing. I'm like, I'm on social media. I don't want to be on social media. I'm really tired. I should just go to bed, but I'm just going to keep scrolling.
Can I say, I read something the other day that said self-sabotage is about keeping ourselves safe. It's because it's what our body knows. It's what we know. So our body and brains are constantly trying to keep us safe. So self-sabotage is, well, this is what we do when we get to this stage because I don't want you to break out of this. This is, and I thought that was a really interesting concept because
that's interesting.
It's what we've experienced before. And so we go, could be changing things here. Let's not do that. Could be dangerous. Let's go back. Let's go and have a Twix and let's go and sit on our scroll our phone.
Yeah, my therapist would say I'm doing numbing behaviour.
Yes.
It's numbing behaviour, which is, it's numbing.
Yeah.
It's like I'm not quite willing to face, or I haven't even got the capacity. It's almost like those moments where if you were a child, your parent would take it out of your hands. You know, when you have a toddler and you say, you are going to bed, and you would put them in the cot and you would like force them. It's almost like we need somebody to kind of lovingly take the thing out of our hand or whatever and say, this is, you're numbing, you're not, you might be keeping yourself safe temporarily, but you aren't going to feel that great later. That's the problem. And I then have to do something to kind of break this. What I find, if there's advice in this for anybody, because I haven't nailed it, but I have to just like break the cycle with something, doing something that feels good, you know, go out to the park with my dog, sing at the top of my voice, do something that I'm telling myself I'm closing that loop and we go again, I guess.
Yes. You're in a cycle and it's, I mean, sometimes my husband does take my phone out of my hand and put it in high and I go, no, like a toddler.
My husband sometimes puts me on the sofa and says, sit down and just sit there and is very sort of like, we'll put a blanket over me and then go and do stuff because he knows that he's sort of calm and I'm up and down and he knows when I'm sort of going a bit manic or whatever. And that's what you do need. Like you say, it's like you can't, and I feel like, why can't I put my phone down? I need someone to step in and you, it's almost like you can't parent yourself. And numbing is really interesting. No. I think it is like a numbing thing, isn't it? I can't face this. So I'm just going to go and scroll Instagram for 3 hours, but also check this and that and come back and go around in a circle.
That's right. And there's a difference between like intentionally choosing to engage with something like social media or knowing that you are doing this in a passive, in a way that's not kind and not what you need. And it's not kind to yourself. It's not what you need. It's not going to leave you feeling better. It's actually going to leave you feeling worse and more depleted and questioning. And I think it is about arming ourselves with as many strategies as we can that help us to break those loops as quick as we can. And also be kind. Like you say, sometimes you've just got to let yourself self-sabotage and be kind, but I'm still working this one out very much so. But I think, again, the point of this whole conversation is helping people who are listening and ourselves spot the patterns and also spot what are our personal challenges. For some people, it will be the exact opposite of the stuff we're saying, that their strengths are very, very different, and what causes them to burn out. So if they're more quick, deeper thinking individuals, we've all kind of suggested we're quite quick. If there's people listening who are more reflective, deep thinking individuals, spend a lot of time alone, they can also overdo that, and they need the sense of community and connection to others, and also need to sometimes be spontaneous or give the perspective or go with it. But they also would struggle if they were constantly being asked to do what isn't their best. And I often think about the way we do meetings at work and the way we do life. It does more suit people like us, because people are often unprepared, on the hoof, and we often miss the gold in someone who is much more contemplative and considered, because we haven't got time and nobody's prepared and nobody's told you beforehand what we're doing. And I've got colleagues in the past who would say, I'm kind of going down a niche point here, but if you don't give me an agenda and I don't know what we're talking about, I'm not going to talk. I won't share until I've thought. And that's alien to me, because I talk to make sense.
Yes.
So other people make sense and then they talk.
Yes.
But I am the other way around completely, which is why I've said to you as we're talking, I've not said this before, I'm thinking about it as we're talking. That's how I work. But if I'm constantly asking somebody else to do that for the sake of our conversation around burnout, etc., that is so hard. Imagine having to do that every day just to get your job done. No wonder. Mm. No wonder that's exhausting.
That's very much like me and my husband. I will start a conversation and I'll start with one point, and by the end I've worked out, or I've come full circle, or I've got a different opinion.
Yeah.
But I have to talk to understand. I have to journal or I have to speak. I can't.
Me too.
I can't do it otherwise. Whereas my husband will always answer a question with a fully formed answer, and I'll think, how are you doing that? How do you know what you think? I've got to talk about it. And like you say, to be put in that environment, and you're right, it does, the society does sort of, we're probably luckier in society with that kind of those improvisational skills, which again is why knowing the strengths, having done the strengths test with you, which we know Susie will probably have empathy, responsibility, activator possibly on hers, was really interesting to see the shadow sides of those things and how you can then come across, or how you, you know, what the downfall of that can be. Mm. And once you know that, you can kind of hopefully be more aware, so you can protect yourself a little bit from burnout and bore out.
Exactly that. It's the whole, how do I take care of myself knowing this? How do I, one of my biggest challenges that can actually cause me to have burnout, and has probably led to some of the most difficult episodes for me, my life challenge is that I care too much what people think. Mm. That is a big problem for me. And I really do. And what that leads to is, I have high expectations of what people will think of me. I have high expectations on whether I'm liked, whether I've done my work well enough, have I done enough. And so what that does is that particular driver is not a bad thing, because it does mean that I've got capacity to care for quite a few people, to have lots of friendships. But then the problem is I hit that point where, as we talked before, where I'm suddenly like, nobody really cares about me. It's always just what they, I get this narrative of, when I'm then exhausted, of, they're only friends because of what you'll do or what you'll be or what you represent. And nobody really cares about you like you care about them. And when I've hit that point, I am on the road to nowhere good. So now I know that about myself. When those things start to come in, I will think about what is going to help me get back to here. Where am I having unfair expectations on people that I've never expressed? Where have I got to actually process some disappointment where people have been pretty lame in their, you know, their response to me? And what is driving me to this kind of overdrive that this is where my success comes from? And that's where we have to ground ourselves. Just to go back to where you were saying, Esther, around, like, for example, in the Success Myth and other books, is what's my measure of success, which is outside of things that are not in my control? It's not in my control what people think of me. So I have got that knowledge of myself, and I have not nailed it, but I can literally spot myself behaving like that, and I can kind of go through a bit of a process with myself to get back to a healthy place. And if you don't know that about yourself, you just think, what is wrong with me? Why do I feel like this? Why am I? If you don't understand that that is your kind of like personal Achilles heel, how can you deal with it? Whereas I do know I'm too bothered, and I don't want to don't want to do that for the rest of my life. I want to do better.
Mm. And I think also our identity is tied up into what we do all the time, what our job is. It's all like, I am this. And then if you're not that, then who are you? And that's coming back to the pandemic. That's what that did. It stripped us all of, well, who am I? And it's how you introduce yourself. And I know I listened back to our chat that we had a couple of years ago. Mm. And you talked about how things like hobbies, you know, it doesn't have to be something that's paid. You can be getting what you need from other things. It doesn't, if you can't get it from your work, you can get it from other things. But identity and just the way we've sort of constructed society, it's weird, isn't it? We have to be something, and we have to, there's an idea of success, a bigger house, a this, a that.
When we get like this, and Susie, going back to what you were saying about yourself, when you feel like that, I was thinking about how, you know, I think I said this the other day on one of the calls. If you've got a rose bush, and I'm not a gardener, so this is kind of outside of my skill set, but a gardener will cut it back, and that's painful. Like, it looks like it's quite painful, but maybe some of what's going on when we're experiencing this stuff is painful, but painful growth. And it doesn't have to be for no reason. And if you actually do if you're willing to do the work in those moments to think, right, what's got me here? Why do I feel like this? Where am I not feeling fulfilled? Have my values been crossed? Is there some misunderstanding or an expectation that's not been met? And to stop and do the work, it doesn't have to be for no reason. It can be for like our growth and for our good. And taking that forward into the next episode. So actually we learn, this is what I need. This is good for me. This is not good for me. I need to be able to say yes to this and no to that. And hopefully keep ourselves as best as we can within that nice middle sweet spot, which means we're not bored to tears. And we're not burning ourselves out. And I think the last thing I'd say on that is, again, this is really twee, but my therapist would also say, you are a human being, you're not a human doing. And that, you know, it's just simply at the core of who we are. If you think about a tiny baby, they are so loved by a parent, and they haven't done a single thing to be like worthy of that love other than be born. And as adults, it's like we totally lose sight of that. That a baby is loved for zero condition, you know, whether they sleep at night, do as they should, it doesn't really matter. They're wholly loved and accepted. And maybe that's a nice place to kind of, you know, reflect and think, we're just babies that grew up and just should still be deeply loved and deeply accepted, regardless of what we do.
Do you know, I've got a photograph of my phone, and it's my screensaver, and it's me as a little girl. And it reminds me not to be nasty to myself. And I think, and it's good. Important to remember that there's those sort of different versions of you inside. And there's me at many different ages. We've all got different ages in us. And I think, and I that to sort of go, just be nice to yourself. Hannah, you've been amazing. Mm. How do people work with you if they want to work with you? Because obviously I am, and you're bloody brilliant. Tell people what they can do if they want to come and work with you or do a course.
Okay, so three actions. One, if they follow me on socials, it's Hello Hannah Miller. It's simply that, anywhere on any of the socials, most active really on Instagram. My website is called hellosidekick.co. They can find out all about the courses on there, and they can contact me. They can just direct message me. It's absolutely fine. And the third thing, I forgot what that was. I know. I have a weekly blog that comes out that people can get if they want a bit more on a Wednesday morning. It's called The Sidetrack at the moment, but I'm just about to change the name and change the whole vibe of that. I haven't quite said it out loud yet, but that comes on a Wednesday morning. You can sign up on the website. It's called The Sidetrack.
Lovely.
Oh, great. I'll do that immediately.
Thank you so, so much for coming on. It's always a delight to talk to you. You're so knowledgeable, and you're, you know, making a big difference to a lot of people's lives. So it's brilliant what you do.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you, Susie.
That was amazing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a lovely rest of the day.
Thank you, Hannah.
You have been listening to Limited Time Only.
A huge thank you to the wonderful Hannah Miller for talking to us for the second time on LTO. We'd love to hear your responses to that chat. You can get in touch with us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook, and by email if you fancy that. It's all in the show notes. Thank you very much to our patrons, and thank you, of course, to you for listening. We will see you in 2 weeks' time for the next episode of Limited Time Only, a pick-me-up in podcast form.
Right, I'm turning my computer off and going for a bath.